And our Friday panel is with us in studio this morning, and we have with us this morning a preacher and a dancer. So I'd like to say a huge welcome to Father Pat Lombard, parish priest of St Anne's in Sligo, and to Jim Lawler, who's former president of Sligo Chamber of Commerce and Tidy Towns chairman as well. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on the show this morning. And we'll start with President Higgins, I think, which so many people have texted us about during the week. Father Pat, are you a fan of President Higgins, first of all, in general?
Well, not? I suppose, I think he certainly has achieved more than I thought he might. I think he's proved statesmanlike, and I think he's been open to opening up the Phoenix Park to a lot of people, a lot of groups going in there. And I think for a man of his years, I think he's just showing what our senior people can do to us all. And I think he's a great encouragement. You know, we've seen the Queen next door and her 70 years of service. Now, I'm not saying that we'll have Michael D. Higgins for 70 years, but I think it just shows, and of course Pope Francis as well. So we're seeing, you know, the great contribution that our senior people can make. And I think Michael D. Higgins is making a very real contribution to the Irish state and the Irish people.
Should he have kept his mouth shut during the week or not?
Well, you know, I suppose, you know, we all maybe open our mouths a little bit too big at times. I'm probably guilty of that, perhaps, as well, from time to time. I know that he ran into a little bit of controversy as well when he commented on the killings of 50 Christians in Nigeria. And in fairness, he criticised and condemned the killings, but he also appeared to link it with climate change and issues there, and he ran into some trouble there too. So I suppose, you know, no matter what you do, you're you know, to try and keep all sides going, sometimes you can unintentionally run it into trouble, you know, and you know, we can all do that.
All right, okay. So you wouldn't disagree with him being president for life?
Oh, maybe? No, well, president for life, that's for the Chinese or Mr. Putin or someone like that. Not here, but I think for the period of time he's been there, he's done well.
Right, okay. Jim, just first of all, his overall performance, are you impressed with President Higgins or not, before we come to the issue?
I think in general, you'd have to say that he's done a relatively good job. There's no doubt that from time to time he maybe shows his left-leaning tendencies, and he has in the past when on the debts of dictators, left-wing dictators in South America, has praised them. With regards to the actual position, it was De Valera, I think, that set up the position of president, and it was fundamentally to prevent the Queen coming over to Ireland. It was supposed to be a ceremonial thing. The actual job only has two functions. One is that he does not have to accept a vote at the Dáil to dissolve, and the other one is that he has the right to refer legislation to the Supreme Court if he thinks it's unconstitutional. So within those confines, yes. I think, relatively speaking, he's doing a good job. But fundamentally, we look at the issue, and nobody can deny it's a disaster.
The housing issue now we're talking about, yeah.
Now, maybe he has overstepped the line. From a personal perspective, I think that what we need to do is the government should approach the housing issue in the same way as they did the COVID. Have a group of people who are specialists in it and can address the problem. We've a fundamental problem that has been going on for decades, and that is that in the country, about 28,000 to 30,000 people die, but we have, on average, 55,000 to 70,000 births. So the population is growing steadily, and that's complicated by the fact that in an average year, between Irish people returning to work in Ireland, plus immigrants, we've an additional 25,000. And if you project that down the line, that's where the problems are arising.
Right, okay. So when you're talking about the presidential function, there was one of our contributors early earlier said he'd researched this, and there was nothing to suggest in the Constitution that the President couldn't have an opinion or an express opinion. I don't know if that's the case or not, but traditionally we're always led to believe that he couldn't interfere in political matters, if that's what people see it.
Well, both of the two exemplary women presidents, I think all the male presidents have been politicians, and it's been like a sinecure up in the park for 7 years to give them a big pension and keep them out of the way. But the women changed that, and both Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese were very good presidents, and they were not afraid to speak their mind. They were not afraid to challenge the government. I think in a healthy democracy, there's nothing wrong with the president expressing an opinion, especially in an issue like this, where it's quite blatantly an issue.
Yeah. Right, OK. Brian and Terry have been on from Sligo Cemetery already, saying that Father Pat has their vote for next bishop. So there you go. We thought we'd get that one in early.
Oh, dear.
And I don't know how political that is, Father Pat. But speaking of, just to mention this, because a lot of people have commented on it, did you hear the spat between Piers Doherty and Leo Varadkar in the Dáil? And we had one woman on before 10 saying, you know, she's trying to teach her 7-year-old daughter right from wrong and having respect for people, and then you hear that from two grown men. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think it was unfortunate. I think, you know, there's one thing about debating the issues, and I think robust debate with issues is always important. But I think, in fairness, I think we should try and stay away from personal abuse and personal innuendo. And if we can try and do that, you know, what happens is one person says one thing and someone gets annoyed and they counter it with more comments. And I suppose the fact is that in the Dáil, you cannot be sued for anything you say, so you can say anything about anyone kind of get away with it. You're kind of immune in many ways, and I think that's it's sad that when we if our politicians can really keep to the issues as opposed to lambasting one another in a personal capacity. Yeah.
Jim, a quick comment on that as well.
Yeah,
did you hear of it? Did you watch it? Or
it's a poor example for the anybody in the country. I'm not just going to say for young people, for everybody. I suppose you've got to look at it again. Politicians, the first thing they think of the day after an election is, how do I get elected the next time?
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. And I think the bringing of personalities and past histories into play is just not acceptable. I think they should cop on, get on. We have enough problems in the country. And it's easy, I suppose, when you're in opposition to be anti-everything. But I'd like to see more constructive comments coming from them rather than slagging each other on both sides.
Right, OK. Father Pat, I suppose, to a large extent, you're at the coal face of what is facing people at the moment. There are a lot of people struggling out there, as we know from this programme, on a daily basis. Are you sensing that? Is it tough out there?
Oh, sure, it is out there. I know that the hostels in Shalimar, Maryville, I know that they're full. I know that there's a lot of people looking for homes. You know, if you're trying to rent a home around Sligo, you're paying, was it maybe up to 1,400-1,500 a month? You know, that who can afford that? You know, we are talking, mentioned about the housing issue. Like, we have over 500 households in the Sligo area qualified for social housing, looking to try and get a home. I was recently in one of the lovely apartments just on the just as you go out the Ross's Point Road, and again they were local authority build, and you know, I was very impressed with them, you know. But I think we need more. Well, we obviously need more accommodation. We need more housing. I think we've a lot of people trying to look for new houses and looking families looking for somewhere to live. You know, we pass the petrol pumps every day, and you know, it's up near 5 cents every day you pass. You're nearly afraid to look at what it's saying now, and all our utility bills are up as well. So you know, it's I suppose really we're looking at the Ukraine war is having a huge impact. I think Ukraine is seen as the breadbasket of the world. 5% of the world's wheat, corn, 30% of the world's sunflower oil comes from the Ukraine. This is having an impact not just on Europe, but on Africa and right throughout different parts of the world as well, that food is in short supply, that everything is going up. We've stopped and are stopping, and it's right, of course, the use of Russian oil and gas and coal and whatever else. But again, it's playing into the energy crisis that we're facing at the moment. And, there are fears for global recession. You know, interest rates may well be going up. People, if they're going to have to pay increased mortgages, they're going to feel the impact on that. So, in every sector, I think we are facing into a crisis at the moment. And I think we need to be very, very careful and try and manage the situation as best we can.
Okay, and do people turn, do you notice any trends when this happens in society? Do people turn to religion more?
Well, I hope they wouldn't be just turning to religion at times of crisis. You know, God is always there. And I suppose I'm in the business of reassuring people that in the ups and downs of life, in every situation, God is there. He's present with us. He loves each of us, irrespective of what our story is, irrespective of who we are, or irrespective of how we feel about ourselves. He is with us to help us and encourage us and to love us along the road of life. And I think if we have that sense of our own dignity, our own self-worth, that we are truly loved by God, when we really feel that, when we really feel it in our hearts, we'll try and put the hand out to those around us who are struggling. And I think that's really what we're called to do, to walk in solidarity with one another and to try and help one another along the way. And I think if we really feel that God is with us, no matter what our story is or what our trouble is or what our joy is, and that whoever we are, irrespective of our colour, our nationality, our sexuality, our gender, whatever it may be, whether we're rich or whether we're poor, that God loves us intimately, whoever we are, and he's stretching out his hand to us to help us along the road. And there's the calling on me and all of us to try and follow the example of Jesus and stretch out that hand to all the people we come in contact with.
Inflation, Jim, I think at its worst level for 38 years. Was there an inevitability about this? Was it always going to happen? Do you remember being as bad as it is at the moment?
I can tell you, last year, up to last December, I was a trustee of a big pension fund, and I resigned because not one of my colleagues would agree with me that inflation was going to be a big issue. And there's no doubt that the cost of living is a big issue for a lot of people.
You could see it then.
Yeah, look, all you had to do was look at the commodity prices. Mm. And commodity prices have been consistently rising for well over a year. I took the liberty of writing to the Minister of Finance and asking them what inflation figure were they going to incorporate into the budget. And
did you get a reply?
Sorry?
Did you get a reply?
Oh, I did, yeah. And it was to say that they had entered into pre-budget negotiations and that they were not in a position to give me that figure. And they put it on the bottom, however, it is an issue. Now, I look back to, and I'm old enough, I'm 86 years of age now, and I look back to the 50s, and the way we dealt with it then was every 3 or 4 months, they put a value on the rise in the cost of living, a monetary value. There's no doubt if you stick with percentages, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Yeah.
And so 1% was given a value, and that could be, just for argument's sake, 10 euros. So if inflation went up 7%, you got a multiple of that. And everybody got the same, from the managing director down to the people sweeping the floor. So the gap between rich and poor did not get worse. It stayed the same. Yeah. And with modern technology and all the algorithms and things like that, I cannot for the life of me see why we can't get back to doing...
When and why did that change then, tell us, or can you remember why it changed?
Because it suits... I don't want to sound that I'm anti-union, because I was a shop steward, and when I moved from working in the factory into the offices, I formed a union for the first time in the company. When I became a manager, I did the same.
Yeah.
But unions And politicians. Politicians, TDs, their salaries are tied to principal officers.
Yeah.
So if the civil and public service unions negotiate a deal, the politicians all get it. Those sitting around the table at the moment represent, there's about short of 500,000 people in trade unions at the moment. But we've 2.5 million employees. So they now only represent about 20% of the population. But the significant thing is that nearly three quarters of those are civil and public servants. So you've got the government who have a vested interest. The people, and I'm not criticising, it's just a system that has evolved over time. But I do think it should be possible to put a value on a 1% increase and then everybody gets it. It's, you know, people say we can't at the moment, builders won't take on building houses because they can't get a price. And people have told me, you go down to, I won't name the companies downtown, and you say, I want steel. They will give you a tender, an estimate, but it only has a life of maybe 48 hours. There's no reason why, in my opinion, people, we can't say, look, the housing problem was solved in the 1930s and 40s by building generic style houses. They were almost all the same. No matter what town you went to, there were two-bedroom and three-bedroom corporation or council houses, and they were all the same. I can't for the life of me see why we can't, design a one-bed, two-bed, three-bed and four-bed house, and you tell every county council, you've got to build the same one. Because that allows you quantify how much it's going to cost. And if you then put a clause in that every 3 months you review the cost of the inputs and you agree in the contract that you will pay that input, then builders have a defined and a guarantee that they won't be at a loss.
Yeah,
you can build in a profit margin for them. You can requisition land. Look, at the moment you have to ask the question, county councils and corporations throughout this country, when they take back a house, they're taking between 8 months and 20 months to refurbish it. And you have to ask the question, in a housing crisis, why is that happening?
Yeah. Right, 0719 11 8104 are number to call if you want to ask any questions of our panel, or indeed make any comments at all. Or you can text or WhatsApp 083 3500 530. Father Pat, I don't know if you're one of these cereal coffee or tea drinkers that you grab a coffee every morning before you go out and walk your dogs or
not every morning, but you know, certainly if I'm in the car and somewhere along the line, you know, I try and pull in and have a coffee somewhere and I think it's a tea, and gives you a boost for the rest of the journey. And I think just even from a kind of a road safety point of view, it's good to have a little break and a little cup of tea or a little cup of something somewhere along the road.
You might be paying more for that if certain groups have their way. And we were talking about the latest Litter League survey earlier in the week. Sligo mid-table, Letterkenny second cleanest town in the country, apparently. But the group behind the survey, Eyeball, adding their weight to the calls for a levy on coffee cups.
Yeah, I'm not
Would
sure.
Would you agree with her?
I'm not sure that we need more taxes or more levies. I thinking about that, I was just thinking about St. Anne's. And, you know, normally I go out in the mornings and see, is there any litter? And I, myself or Tony, pick it up. And maybe in the evening time I take a run round again. And I suppose a year ago or 18 months ago, I think the big thing I was picking up were masks. I think less masks are there at the moment. There are some takeaway bags, some coffee cups, occasionally. I think the amount of litter around the church has decreased. The one thing I would say is that there always seems to be an awful lot of cigarette butts and cigarette packets. And, you know, I think if you walk along the streets, you can see quite a lot of cigarette butts, particularly outside offices, outside public buildings, outside churches. And you're there every morning trying to sweep that up. I would think, I'm not sure what Jim thinks, but, you know, anywhere you look, if you have to try and find a bin, it's very, very difficult to find a litter bin.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
And sometimes, you know, people, you know, things fall out of their hands or whatever. But I think if there were more bins available. Now, I know there was an issue that maybe some of the bins were too big and people were bringing along their household rubbish. Yeah. But I think the small little bins that used to be nearly on every ESB pole in the past, and you could pop in your coffee cup or whatever. I think a return to that would be a good idea. Preferable than yet another levy or yet another tax.
So maybe counterproductive. The counter argument is that it won't make any difference to those who do litter their coffee cups. It won't have an impact. They'll still continue to do so.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that the levy is going to have any impact. Yeah.
Right, okay, Jim, of course, you have huge experience in this field. Are you for or against a levy? Would that stop?
Against it.
Against it.
In the current environment, I think any extra tax, no matter what it's on, adds to the cost of living. And I think we in many ways, we're kind of a transient people. People are collecting cups of coffee on the go, as they call it. Fundamentally, this comes back to citizen responsibility.
Yeah.
During my time as chairman of the Tidy Towns, I think we were very successful in getting the people of the town. I regularly tell the story of an old man. I thought he wanted to cross the Inner Relief Road, and he was waving his walking stick at traffic and stopped it. And this was during my time as chairman of the Tidy Towns. And when the traffic stopped, he walked out in the middle of the street and he picked up a cigarette packet. And when he came back in, I congratulated him, and he said, "Our town is our town, and we'll keep it clean." And I personally felt that was, we had crossed the Rubicon in that people had begun to realise it's their responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, we can blame everyone. The bins.
Yeah, the bins, what follow. And it comes up on the show, I have to say, on a regular basis. Not enough bins. So, again, there is a problem, as Father Pat says, with people abusing that situation, dumping household rubbish in public bins.
There are people in town that had bins for business, and they put them out, and they come down in the morning and the street was covered because people from different places won't pay for their bins to be collected.
Yeah.
So they go and spread it around in different, and they stuff it in, and the next one comes along, there's no room, they leave it beside it, and then the crows come along, or the seagulls, and they pick it and they pull it around the place. It has to come back to personal responsibility, and I think we don't concentrate enough on that. I would be in favour of people, maybe the litter wardens around town, having a loud hailer, and if they see someone throwing something away, they identify them very loudly and we put peer pressure on them.
Shame them publicly and call out their name. That's a new one. I never heard of that one.
I've been told to F off by people where I saw them throwing something away, and I said, "Do you realise this is our town and you're abusing it?" And I was told what to do with myself. But fundamentally, it comes back to personal responsibility.
And just before we leave it, please tell us things are getting better in that regard. People are more educated and more responsible. Are they, do you think?
I think it's a never-ending battle. I think you have to keep the pressure on. And you have to show, again, I don't know how many are going out now, but every Sunday morning when I was chairman at the Tidy Towns, we'd have 28 people were walking different parts of the town, litter picking. Yeah. They also provided a tourist information service because there was no tourist office open, you know, which is another story.
Yeah, no, it continues to be the case. We're told it's going to change, but I think it's still closed as far as I know. Last time I passed by, it was still closed.
I think it's opening July and August.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, soon we're told. Okay, Father Pat, you mentioned the passing by filling stations and the nearly daily rise in fuel costs. Eamon Ryan has told us anybody struggling, they can go to their local social welfare office. We had a Green Party local representative saying he was slightly misunderstood in what he said. Is that the best solution, or do the government need to do more, do you think?
Jim, how can I be charitable today? I think Eamon wants us all to be on our e-scooters or bicycles. Maybe I think his comment was a little flippant, maybe, I don't know. Maybe we do need to have start looking at our e-scooters or bicycles or whatever. I don't know. I think twice about going on long journeys now. Anyway,
yeah.
I think it opens up the issue about our trains and our buses the public sector transport. I think it certainly challenges us to look at that again, and I think the next time I go to Dublin, I'll certainly be on the train. I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's not cheap either at the moment.
That's not cheap either. No,
and not
I think
at all.
I think maybe we need to try and encourage, if we want to encourage people to travel on public transport, maybe we need to make it more affordable.
Yeah, more affordable and a better public transport
system as well.
Yeah,
I think compared to what was the case long ago, and you'd a train up and a train down, or two trains up and two trains down. The service has improved, and I think the quality of the rolling stock has improved immensely. But at the same time, if you feel that you're going to have to book your seat, and if you go and you're going to be standing for any part of the journey, I think that's unacceptable either.
Yeah, okay. I think I mentioned this on the panel a few weeks ago. There was a contributor on Liveline a couple of weeks ago, an American woman who had moved to Ireland, and she had decided to move back to the United States, and she'd written an article, or she had put up a blog message or whatever, 10 reasons why people should not move to Ireland. And number one by far was public transport, lack of public transport. And her argument was, if you don't have a car, particularly in rural Ireland, you're just completely lost. Mm. Jim, Eamon Ryan, head to your social welfare office for assistance.
In actual fact, it's the one of those rare occasions I agree with Eamon Ryan.
You wouldn't agree with him normally, no?
In some ways, I do. I just think the man is misunderstood. He was stating his facts. The Minister for Social Protection had only a week previously announced that people who were in trouble could go to the offices. And I think he was just reflecting that. There's no doubt the man will be pilloried. I think when we look now, and I fear for the young people, I fear for my grandchildren, the future they have. If you look at what's happening in the world, there's no doubt that global warming is having a significant effect. I mean, two friends of mine flew out for a dancing week in Spain yesterday, and I rang them to say, make sure you put plenty of factor 50, because the temperatures are going to be over 40. These incidents are happening much more quickly. And a worrying thing is that desertification, whereby it gets so dry and so warm that nothing grows, is now affecting southern Italy. It's jumped the Mediterranean from. Mm. And on the top end of Africa, there's tens of millions of people there in Kenya, Ethiopia and all that area, they're starving because of global warming. The crops have lost, they've had droughts, they've no rain. And then people wonder why they're running away, and they're becoming immigrants for us, trying to get into these countries. A survey of countries and the future showed that Ireland would be one of probably the best places in Europe to live. Ourselves in Canada topped the survey. I think we have to take this very seriously. Eamon Ryan, I think his manner of delivering what is a very serious problem and communicating it is poor. But the principle of what he's saying is correct, and we have to take notice of it.
Yeah, apparently it's 34 degrees in London today, and was yesterday as well. 34 degrees. We could do a bit of that around here. But I get the point you're making. The hospital situation, the overcrowding situation, Father Pat, I'm sure you hear about that, come across it on a regular basis, situation in our hospitals.
Well, I think when you've Dr. Fergal Hickey coming on the radio speaking about the crisis and saying that it's the worst he's ever come across, in his time in Sligo, I think we need to really listen when Dr. Hickey speaks. And I know there's the whole new emergency department built at the very front of Sligo University Hospital now. You know, Paul Taylor was speaking about an injury clinic during the week. Perhaps there needs to be somewhere where people can go for minor injuries. I understand that there's 11 in the country, including one in my own county, Roscommon. And I think if patients can be rerouted if they have minor injuries to the injury clinic, maybe it might free up A&E for the more serious issues. I'm not an expert on these things, but certainly when I hear Dr. Hickey speaking and hear Paul Taylor speaking, I think we have to take heed of what they're suggesting.
Yeah, all right, okay. Jim, again, it's been a long-standing issue which you've spoken out before in your various capacities down the years. The worry, I think, is that piece by piece, Sligo University Hospital has been downgraded. Would you buy into that or see that to be the case or not?
No, I'm inclined to think this goes back to the population issue, that the provision of services in the medical field have not kept pace with the growth in the population. It's a very complicated issue because I don't like to use the word bed blockers, but we have a situation where, because of a shortage of public health nurses and carers in the community, that a lot of older people can't go home.
Yeah.
And we have to recognise the fact that in this part of the country, we have been subject, not maybe as badly as Donegal or Mayo, but we've had so many of our young people leave that there are many older people now, and their children are in Australia and in other far-flung places. It strikes me, I listened on the radio recently to the hospital in Kilkenny. They don't have a problem. And the consultant there was saying that what they did is they've reconfigured the way they operate. They've given great, they've now linked up to a much greater extent with the GPs. Yeah. And the GPs are making more decisions. So instead of going to the hospital and requesting an X-ray, the GP can just sign the piece of paper, they get up and they get the response back. I look back to when I was growing up, and when we got cuts, our mothers doused us with iodine, which burnt the arms off us. If we got something went septic and we played an awful lot more than people do nowadays, you got a poultice put on it. Your mother made it out of bread with Epsom salt.
Forgot about the poultice,
There's too many people going to the hospitals that don't necessarily go. Having said that, we live in a more complicated world than when I was growing up. I think maybe in the current situation, greater use of triage nurses. But then when you go to the next step with doctors, we haven't got enough doctors. Again, it comes back to this thing. We are denuding some of the poorest countries of the world of their doctors and their nurses in order to keep ourselves and our heads above water. I cannot understand, as somebody who maybe when working I specialise in reorganisation, why we cannot solve the problem. I look at the HSE, and if you look at the preponderance of management, you have to ask the question, why do we need it? I mean, if you look back now, we used to have in a hospital a matron, an assistant matron, and sisters on a ward. Now we've, and I'm not criticising them because I think they do a great job, but we've nurse managers 1 to 4. And that's only one strata, and then you go into the next. And we've too many managers.
Yeah,
we've not enough people at the cutting edge.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people will criticise me for saying that, but these are the realities, that if we're going to solve the problems, we have to be brutally honest with ourselves and not be afraid to say, well, part of the problem is yourself.
I have a box of coins in the attic at home, handed down from a couple of generations. And I also always live in the distant hope that someday somebody will value one of the coins and I can happily retire and head off into the sunset. Unlikely to be the case. But the reason I bring it up, Pat, is because people have coins.
Yes.
But they can make use of them and help others. So they tell us about Mary's Meals.
Mary's Meals has been in existence, I suppose, over 20 years. It was started first by a Scottish guy, Magnus McFarren Barrow. Yeah. And he saw the need for feeding children in third world countries.
Yeah.
And how they could be fed in places of education so that the young child would actually get their education by going to school and actually get a meal as well, so that their parents wouldn't keep them at home to try and earn money, but that their parents would try and encourage them to go to school, to learn, to get a skill, but also would get a meal as they go there too. And Mary's Meals are currently feeding over 2 million children each day. And yeah. Those children are being fed at places of education. And it costs about €18.60 to feed a child for a full year.
Yeah.
You or I may go to a restaurant, we wouldn't be long paying €18.60 for a single meal. €18.60 can pay a child in a can pay for food, a dinner for a child in a third world country for a full year. And I know that there's, over the last few years, a number of people have been coming into us and saying, we'd like to make a little donation.
Yeah.
We'd like to make a donation to Mary's Meals. And I suppose we got interested in Mary's Meals ourselves in St. Anne's, and we formed a little group in recent weeks, just a little group that would maybe encourage and assist collection of funds for Mary's Meals to feed those who children who wouldn't get a meal otherwise. And we know that there are so many people, they're financially, there's so many demands, people are looking for money for this, that and the other. And a way that we thought would be a good way of getting funds would be saying to people, look, if you have an old jar of old coins, old pounds, old shillings, old pence, old pounds, any old notes, and they're lying there and they'll be lying there for years.
So they're all value and they can help.
They're all very valuable and they can make a huge... 9 cents can feed a child for a day.
Okay.
You know, you look at in your change in your pocket, how many 9 cents are there? That can feed a child. Yeah. A number of years ago, I was in India, and I've been there a few times. And myself and my friends, we were over to see the work of the Missions and Charity in Calcutta, and we were in a restaurant. And we came out from the restaurant barbecue in Park Street, and the friends I were with said, "Make sure you bring a doggy bag," and we brought a doggy bag out. And when we came outside of the restaurant, the children had queued up and were waiting for us. And as we crossed the road to get our taxi, looking back and seeing the little children with their hands in our doggy bags, eating our scraps, really
it's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah. And so just maybe you and I and all of us, we have those old coins. It can make a difference. And if you have those coins, drop them into us in St. Anne's or drop them into your local church and we will arrange to collect them from your church.
Well, I suspect no more than myself, I'd say people have loads of them hanging around, not only in attics like me, but down behind couches and all sorts. So
And I'd say thank you to anyone who might consider doing that. We really appreciate that. And I think, you know, you can feel good as well about yourself having make, you know, something that's not contributing directly to you. And you can actually make it worthwhile and help someone. And Jim has just talked about global warming and the crisis in Africa. I think we can help the little children in these places.
Okay. Jim, did you want to mention something? I was going to ask you.
I think we should be very worried. The Irish Strategic Investment Fund, which is part of NAMA, this week announced that they were going to invest €500 million in Kilkenny, Waterford, Cork, Limerick and Galway. Not one brass farthing for everything north of a line Dublin-Galway.
Yeah.
And I think...
Not the first time this has happened.
One politician from north of a line saying a word, just because they're all due to go on holiday shortly and that will just drift by. It's to build homes and to encourage people to invest in the areas. 500 million and we don't get anything out of it. I think we have to start questioning what our politicians are doing. They stand up in the Dáil, they tell us as particularly the opposition, what they're going to do, they criticise the government. I think it should be obligatory on every politician that stands up to criticise somebody else that they must tell us where they'll get the money, because the amount of money in the country is limited. We have to spread it out so as that those who need it most get most.